If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for Closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with Destiny.
Greetings in the love of the Supreme Spirit. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is, Your Curiosity is a Clue to Your Fate-Directed Activities. So, if you're ready, let's take a deep breath and allow the enmantling of your divine self to clothe your physical body and personality and infuse and fill your mind, your emotional body, and flood every cell of your physical organism with a living light and a living word and a living love that is your true identity. Take a deep breath. And again, receive the infilling of the Divine Spirit that is your own holiness, your own wholeness manifesting through you. And we ask at this time that the Divine Spirit fill, surround, protect, and reveal to each one of you whatever would be for your highest good this evening, or whenever you would listen to this seminar. Tonight we're looking at a very interesting topic that probably not a lot of you have heard about. We're going to be looking at what is called in Sanskrit, Prarabdha Karma, which simply means fate-directed activities, and how they relate to you in unfolding your destiny as a soul. So, as a prelude, let's do a little exercise. Very few people remember actually standing before what's been called the karmic board, before they incarnated. I know a couple people who recall standing before Lord Michael or Lord Sananda. But I wonder how many actually remember and how many have perhaps mocked that experience up for themselves. So feel free at any time to mock up, that is to say, imagine in your mind's eye standing before you incarnated, before the karmic board or Lord Sananda or Jesus or Mother Mary or the Ashtar Command or Archangel Michael, whomever, and decreeing and deciding with them what you would like to unfold in your life that you will be incarnating into and expressing. Because we all did that. We all chose the life and the activities that we are impulsed by interest, attraction, whatever, to be involved with. We had a hand in that. We had the choice given to determine the lay of the land, so to speak, when it came to our next embodiment. So, Let's just do that now. Give ourselves the opportunity and excuse to take a deep breath and close our eyes and ask that if it is for the highest good, we could tap back into that experience just before we incarnated in this body. And be shown whatever it is that we need to be shown at this time. And just imagine that you're in a very wonderful, comfortable, completely safe, and loving room. And around you are the wisest, most loving, just, knowledgeable beings you can imagine. They have known you from the very second that God had the thought of individuating as you. And with that individuation of the unique being that you are, that extension of the love of God that you are, with that very second, these wise elders have been supervising and looking out for you and guiding you and keeping track of what you as a soul wish to learn and inquire into, and explore, and experience. And they hold you accountable to what you want. So they keep you, as it were, congruent and aligned with your own self-defined purpose. So as you find yourself in this room, before these wise and benevolent beings, just ask that you be given something that you can identify with as expressing in your life today. And you will remember, and when the show is finished this evening, you will be able to write it down and journal if that is your wish and intention. Take another deep breath. And open your eyes and be present. Now that's a very simple mock-up that you can do and arrange any way you would like to arrange it when you are mocking it up on your own time. Just know that you have the right to create within you experiences interacting with your masters, angels, teachers, guides, the mystical traveler, the Mahanta, whomever and whatever you use as that which symbolizes for you the divine preceptor, the divine teacher, that you have the right to do that. You can do that. You create your own experiences. Really, you create everything you experience within and without. So make use of the ability that you have to bilocate, to visualize, to move yourself wherever you would be. You can place yourself aboard the Ashtar command ships if that's what you want. You can project yourself and imagine yourself standing in a beautiful city on Venus. Really, your imagination is the only limit. And your imagination, really, is unlimited. So do create for yourself experiences that validates your own beingness, your own inner knowing. So, if we may be so bold as to ask, what exactly, precisely, do you want to know? What are you curious about? If you could ask the Divine Creator any question, you know, one of those big questions that only the Divine Creator would know, what would you ask? I'll just bet you've never asked yourself, much less the Divine Creator, what is it I really want to know? Oh, you did, you know, when you stood before the board, no doubt. But now that you're down here and the veil has pretty much kept you focused on this planet here and now, this lifetime, for a good reason, so you'll be focused here and now, you probably don't consciously always know what you really want. Or what you really want to know. So it's important to pay attention to those things that persistently attract our inquiry. Those things that our minds puzzle over again and again. Those things that we're persistently curious about. So what are you trying to find out, discover, learn more about? Did you ever consider your curiosity as significant, as offering clues to your soul's purpose and destiny? You know, that would make a very useful journaling exercise that you might like to, ask yourself that question. What do I want to know? And then answer it yourself based on your own self-observation. So why is it important, you might ask? Well, it's important to know what exactly you are seeking. Otherwise, how will you know when you found it? That's rather obvious. But a deeper answer might be because what you are seeking to know about, to understand, is closely related to your life's purpose in this incarnation. Perhaps you've overlooked or discounted the deeply embedded attractions, the things that draw you, those inclinations you have towards a particular area of interest. So, let's ask you this. What area of inquiry, knowledge, or interest has been a recurring theme in your life so far? Again, what bottom line do you want to know? Now, that bottom line is what you are here in this incarnation to pursue and discover for yourself. Before you incarnated, you stood before this group of wise elders that have been referred to as the karmic board. The word karma simply means activity board. The board that governs the activities that you're going to be involved with in any given incarnation. So together you considered your future life and mapped out the choices that would be best to unfold the purpose that you as a soul intended to fulfill. This involved the choice of your parents. It also involved whether or not your parents would live or you would end up being adopted. It also involved the environment you incarnated into, the culture, the nation, the ethnic bloodlines that run through your veins. All of this went into the planning. It also gave a choice of various partners if you would end up being married. Or the various friends and close associations and encounters that you would have. Whether or not you would have children. all of that was considered before you took embodiment. And then when you incarnate, you don't remember any of that. And all you have as a clue are those feelings and sentiments and draws and attractions and curiosities that push you, you know, to pursue certain areas. So everything was taken into consideration by this wise karmic board. And with your permission and participation. So it's good to know that you're never a victim of the world you see. You have invented the world you see, which is a quote from the Course in Miracles. I am not a victim of the world I see. I have invented the world I see, the lesson in the Course in Miracles. So based on your previous lifetimes, the karmic board knows where you stand in terms of your spiritual unfoldment and the ultimate goal that you have in mind as you pass through the series of incarnations in time-space in the material universes and psychic universes, because there are many, many, many worlds and, let's say, classrooms of experience on each of the dimensional planes. So how important is it to become consciously aware of these things that seem to be pushing you in different directions, that seem to be driving you, impelling you, calling to you to pursue them? And they're very important because these drives and impulses and the impetus to go into a particular line of inquiry or interest is what is unfolding your destiny. Does every soul have an allotted destiny? Oh, yes. Again, in Sanskrit, your destiny, your predestined activities, is called prarabdha karma or fate karma or predestined, fated activities. You see, each child that's born, each baby that's born, to quote Sai Baba, comes with a garland of their previous actions and activities, each of which has created a consequence that must be in some way addressed, balanced, healed, cleared, worked through. In other words, no one is born without this garland of their previous activities, which, of course, must have their consequences. And karma just means activity. It doesn't mean good or bad. I would say, but there's no neutral karma. Every action has a reaction, cause and effect. So in that sense, you know, we are the creators of this prarabdha karma. And prarabdha would be that portion of our activities that we have allocated to this particular lifetime. So each lifetime has its own, let's say, garland of things that we're going to be addressing in that particular lifetime. Now, exactly how you individually choose to go about unfolding your destiny, your prarabdha karma, and your allocated life lessons is up to you. But the end result will basically be the same. In other words, it's very, very difficult to fail. You really can't. As many times as you think you fail, you are simply going to be given another chance, another chance, another chance. You have endless chances for redos and editing and rescripting as you want. God is in no hurry. In God's eyes, you've never left home. You're just having this play of consciousness that you call your lifetime. And it's really a big dream. You know, it's a big, big drama, big dream. But it seems to be an interesting dream, and we're enjoying it, so we can dream on as long as we want. So For example, let's say that your Prarabdha karma, your destined activities for this life, involve completing and fulfilling previous activities that you'd set in motion in other lifetimes, which is exactly what it is. So you'd be starting and completing and fulfilling many things and moving on to next. Now, this could seem like you've lived many lifetimes in this lifetime. For example, it could mean several marriages, frequent changes in location, as well as vocations. Your interests may shift from cycle to cycle. You may feel like you're a whirling dervish, you know, where you're just going round and around and around. And well, maybe that's not a good example, because whirling dervishes leave their body and go into deep states of divine immersion. But the point is, you may feel dizzy sometimes with the changes that go on in your life if you're really close to that time of graduation. If this is your very last lifetime, obligatory incarnation in the third dimensional worlds, and there's more than one, then you're going to be going through in and out, in and out, in and out, many, many, many experiences, many things. You're not going to be allowed to stay stuck anywhere. You're going to be pushed and expelled or catapulted out of relationships and jobs and situations. As soon as you've completed that, boom, 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 next, 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 next. So, depending on what you have chosen to chew in this lifetime, you could be eating, as John Roger, our teacher, often says, you could be eating a lot of karma. Beak feathers and all, you know, just a lot of things that you're consuming. In fact, some of the gurus, I think it was Neem Karoli Baba, that they said he would sometimes eat copious amounts of food, and more than a normal human would eat. And when asked about this one time, he said he was eating the karma of his devotees. So it takes an action to undo an action. So sometimes gurus will do very strange things to undo your actions if they have taken you under their wing as their disciple. It's their duty to clean you up, to help you, you know, eat heartily. So maybe you've got so much to complete and fulfill and experience that you've left quite a few people in your life totally perplexed and exasperated. Your rapid shifts in lifestyle, your beliefs, your behavior, that even you can't explain. It's just like, I have to do this. I'm sorry. I have to leave. I'm sorry to disappoint you. Whatever. But I know I have to do this. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I can't tell you the number of times I've had to do that in my life. Things I did not want to do. Things I was incredibly attached to. And I had to leave. And I knew I had to leave. And there was no way I could not leave. And you feel horrible sometimes. But you have to do what you have to do. So hopefully you are able to leave this, to leave these situations easily and gracefully, but that isn't always the way it works out. You know, to change spouses, religions, political beliefs, ideologies, in many areas of the world is a death sentence. And I think it's for that reason that certain souls immigrate to lands and cultures that offer more freedom of choice. But, you know, it's so important to be true to yourself, true to what you are being led, guided, even compelled to do. You as a soul alone know what's best for you. So let's say you are that person that I just described, one that's living many lifetimes in this incarnation. And let's say you are on the path of fulfillment in this lifetime. Many of you, I think probably a lot of you, who are an initiate, are in your final incarnation on Earth or close to your final incarnation. And there's a place inside you that actually knows this, a place that perhaps has a fear of getting too involved here. There may be a fear of the world, or something within you that avoids long-term commitments of any kind. And that may be a clue. That may be a clue that you're in the graduation class. Don't fault yourself. Or maybe you just absolutely can't settle on anything you really want to do in the world. Maybe you're one of those souls that really doesn't care about making a lot of money. That's not motivating you. You really aren't driven to be a big success or a big famous person with lots of, I can't even think of the analogies right now, but you know what I'm getting at. There's just nothing in the world, the material world, the world of name and fame and glory and all that stuff, just doesn't do it for you at all. You have no interest. Maybe you've been accused of never settling down, of never being committed, of never being a person that anyone could depend upon. Lucky for you. I mean, the world will make it sound like a really bad thing, like you fail, like you're such a lousy parent or you're such a lousy whatever. And all you're doing is being true to yourself and the divine destiny that you have agreed and contracted to fulfill in this lifetime. So don't take the blame and the opinions of the world as your standard to how well you're doing. Because if you're an enigma, a complete eccentric enigma to the world, you're probably in the graduation class. And that's fantastic. So in being loyal to your higher nature and calling, you may be appearing to be disloyal to the things of the world and the people and relationships in the world. And that's just how it is. People who expected things of you will be hurt, disappointed, maybe even devastated in some cases. But that's not your fault. They have to be responsible for their own feelings that have nothing to do with you. Even though it appears that you affected them, each soul is here for their own curriculum and their own learning, and you come together with whomever you come together with simply to catalyze each other in your spiritual growth. But you may be with people who are very young souls compared to yourself. You may be with people who have many, many more incarnations before they're ready to graduate, and that's between them and God. So don't feel guilty when you're following the directives that you know that you know that you know you have to fulfill, regardless of how it affects someone else. I mean, try to be gracious. Try to be kind. Try to take care of people as best you can so they're not flat out, you know. But on the other hand, you belong to God. Your life belongs to God. Your destiny is to become God, God-like. You know, our nature is divine. So we have to be true to that. So as best you can, understand their reactions. They want you in their lives because they care about you in a personal sense. They have attachment. And they want to relate to you personally. But the truth is, You're living more and more in the impersonal sense of an awakened soul. And you belong, again, to that greater God Self. And that greater God Self has the capacity to embrace all in pure, unconditional, divine love. But it's not personal. You love everyone equally. That's the impersonal self. And you have no attachment. You know, that's really when you're living in that higher consciousness. You're not attached. You don't have needs and things that the souls that are not quite at that level still have. So it may be really weird to think of yourself as a saint. But it's true. Every awakened soul is a saint. And every saint belongs to all of humanity. They have outgrown personal needs and desires and only exist to love and serve all. And in that they are fulfilled. In that do they experience total wholeness and holiness and bliss. So when that is all that holds your attention, when that is all you're involved with, when you live for others, for their happiness and well-being, for their emancipation, then you're home free. You've learned all that these lower worlds could possibly teach you, and you're free to move on to greater divine endeavors beyond. You see, the whole purpose of evolution, of coming into a human body and with that appropriating an etheric body, a mental body, a causal body, an astral body, all of that is for the purpose of becoming a pure conduit for the divine presence, the source energy itself, to intelligently and creatively operate in this world. Every single thing in creation is in that process of becoming a pure conduit for source energy. For example, the logos of the sun is seeking to operate through the solar system as its vehicle of divine manifestation. So and the earth is part of that. The earth is like a center of consciousness within the solar system, through which that solar logos, that great life that infuses the sun like a soul, is seeking to operate through the solar system. And we, as part of the Earth's, let's say, expression, are seeking to bring the pure, formless love and power and creative intelligence of source energy through a center of consciousness called humanity, which again is a center to which the divine will is finding manifestation. And the manifestation that the human entity as a whole is designed to facilitate is right human relations. We are here as conduits through which the source energy is seeking to establish right human relations. And so every one of us is a conduit for that to the degree that we can depersonalize and gradually overcome our lesser little pity pot lives and move into that greater arena in which we expand our consciousness from the little me to the great we. and we begin to live as a community of souls, which again forms another center of consciousness that is the promise that the human center of consciousness is beginning to merge with and become one with. When you talk about the ascension or the shift in consciousness, what's really happening is that increasing numbers of human beings are beginning to enter that fifth kingdom that we call the kingdom of souls, or that center of consciousness we call the group, the collective group, which we could call the soul or the oversoul. And to the degree that we move into harmony with that and integrate that into our personal lives, to that degree do we see right human relations beginning to express in how we interact with people, how we go about our daily life, the choices and values that govern us, and the impact that we have within the human kingdom depends upon the level of light that we began to integrate and absorb and express, which would mean, of course, the degree of integration and assimilation that we have of our soul light, our soul consciousness. So it seems to me, and it seems to anyone that observes, that the older the soul, in terms of its experience being, you know, in these, immersed in these worlds of time, space, and matter, time, space, matter, and energy worlds, that the more the soul has experienced, the more individual and unique they become, even eccentric, and they become a law unto themselves. So the more you master yourself, the more you create a world environment, a reality in which you live that transcends, again, the lower laws of karma, and it bypasses the prarabdha karma, the fate karma. You've already been there and done that, completed, so you literally become a law unto yourself, and you're beginning to move into what we would call the states of God consciousness or self-realization. So, did you ever wonder why you are as you are, and why you express as you do? Have you ever sensed that someone or something greater than your personal self has been subtly guiding your life? Do you sense some inherent guidelines that cause you to avoid certain things? Some inner sense that tells you that certain things are not an option for you? Or have you kept trying to find a place, any place, where you belong, where you truly fit in this world? Or are you okay with allowing the world to make room for and accommodate you? Good question, huh? So if you're still in the stage of a youth, are you finding it really challenging to decide what you want to do with your life? Whether to continue with higher education or just travel? Or what to study or pursue as a career? Or whether to marry and settle down or stay single and mobile? You may have considered living, you know, even in the Himalayan ashram or cave, or becoming a Buddhist monk in Thailand, or joining a convent, a cloistered community, or Mother Teresa's Sisters and Brothers of Charity. But if you did, you may have discovered you didn't fit in there either. Or maybe you did fit in for a while, but then outgrew whatever it offered and had to move on. You know, it seems like there's always that push to move on to whatever's next. You're not being inconsistent. You're not being a flake. You're not being whatever the world thinks to call you, and to think of many things. But you still have to be true to yourself, and you still have to do what you have to do. So maybe you are finding that you have so many talents and interests and abilities that you don't know which one to focus upon as a career. Well, why not give your major interest a time and a season to express without the need to make it a lifelong commitment? Why not, you know, take up harp playing or playing the tuba or whatever, or taking art classes or studying music or whatever it is? And you'll find when it is a previous desire or interest from another lifetime that's being completed, that it will fall away after a while. There was a time in my life when I was, according to my teacher, John Roger, I was eating my Indian karma. I was taking Bharatanatyam, Indian dance. I was studying Hindi and Sanskrit. I was leading the devotional bhajan singing at the Sai Baba centers. I was playing tabla. All of these activities were going on. And that's when John Roger came up and he said I was eating my Indian karma. But sometimes you will find yourself in a cycle, in a season of time, when you're just really, really focused in on some particular thing. You just can't get enough of it. Day and night, you're just like up to your eyebrows in, you know, in this thing that you're passionate about, which I was, about India. And I can't say India fell away. It's my interest. I still am very passionate about it. But it isn't the same as before. You know, I don't have that maniacal drive to be involved with that. And so everything has its place in your life if you allow it to be present with you for as long as it wants to be present, and then watch very carefully the energy. When you've begun to complete it, it'll start to flatline and fall away. All by itself. You really don't have to do anything but be present with what's present as long as it's present. I remember I did that with many, many things in my life, and they just fell away. You know, my interest in acting and being in the theater, in dancing and being in a dance company, those things fell away. My interest in the circus, that fell away. My interest in, just about everything that I've been interested in had a time and a season. I remember one time I was passionate about playing the harp, and a very close friend of mine gave me her harp. And I was just crazy for this harp for, maybe a year. You know, I just couldn't get enough of it. And then one day I just wasn't interested in it anymore. It was just like there was no interest at all. It just vanished. And those are all examples of how things that maybe at one time were tremendously interesting to us, and then suddenly they went bye-bye. And that's because you have completed that prarabdha, that fated, predestined karma or activity, and you're free. So don't feel like you've lost something when that happens. Recognize it rather as a graduation and a completion. Because when you're free, hey, you're free. You can sing, dance, act, play harps, tablas, whatever. But you don't have to. You're not driven. You know, it's not something you're going to have to reincarnate for another lifetime or two or three to, to keep doing it until it's done. So think of many things in your life as completions, as things that you are gradually completing. You might call it your cosmic or your, you might call it your cosmic bucket list. All the the things that you really, really want to do. As much as they arise, try to complete them as best you can. You can do that through meditation, through mocking up experiences on the inner planes, through asking the your upline elders if you could work them out in the dream state, you know, when you're out of the body. You can work out a lot of things that you then don't have to go through in the physical. There are many ways to have a completion. You can declare things completed, but make sure they are. Don't kid yourself. It's not done until it's done. It's no longer an issue when it's no longer an issue. But as long as it's present and there's an interest and a fascination and a passion, then go with it and try as much as possible to be with it 100% and allow it to complete. Once it's completed, there's no more energy on it. So honor your interest in whatever it is at the time and allow each to have its season and cycle of expression. If you stay present with your life as it shows up and go with opportunities as they present and attract you, you will be able to fulfill and fit everything you want or need to into your life. So honor your interests, your curiosity about certain topics, your urge to explore, to go deeper, to go beyond where you've been, where you fit in for a time and a season. But honor your right to live your life in your own unique fashion. To be true to your own self means you are being true to your divine destiny and to the to the higher nature of everyone. You know, even when the person that you have just left is blaming you for ruining their life and breaking your heart, you have to realize that that's just the lower nature of that person, the ego nature. Because on the soul level, they're cheering you on, saying, yes, thank you. You know, thank you for giving my personal self and the lower world this experience. And God bless you and move on because you're helping this person in their unfoldment and to work through what they've contracted to work through. So all individuals follow the more or less the same clues and the same process of gradually awakening. And we awaken from the darkness of ignorance of believing we're, you know, these bodies and these minds, to realizing we're immortal love. We're omnipresent, we're omniscient, and that's really the basis of all of our desire to know things, is the fact that as divine beings, we're actually omniscient. There's nothing we do not know. It's just that we don't know everything here within the human level because the human brain isn't designed to access the fullness of that in this level. It's not appropriate to this particular level. So it's in transcending what we call the limitations of time, space, and what we would call the attachment to a physical body and the mental constructs that we have appropriated, that we begin to move into that vaster sense of self that indeed is omniscient. So it's the nature, it's the very nature of omniscience to show up as curiosity in the human being. And that's a good thing. So we're moving, you know, into these higher states of awareness, which is ever-expanding awareness, unlimited. And every master, every Christ, every Buddha, every avatar has gone through the same earthly suffering, trials, tribulations, meltdowns, and pits of depression and despair. Sometimes we forget that these great ones were all human beings. They all had anger, lust, greed, envy, pride, vanity, delusion, all of that to deal with. You know, they went through the same deadly mental passions we all have to battle and overcome, or as they're called today, personal demons. All of them went through the pity pot, poor me, why is this happening to me, it's so unfair, stage. Every one of them fell in and out of love. All of them fought in wars and killed and were killed over and over again. All had wicked egos, all had monkey minds they had to purify, train, master, and dissolve. And every one of them had moments when they hated themselves and everyone else and didn't want to be here anymore. Sound familiar? Well, we all go through the same process, more or less. So notice that when you are completely present and focused on whatever you are involved with, all sense of self-concern and time evaporates. That's when you totally transcend the ego mind, is when you're totally involved with whatever you're involved with, and you're totally present with it. That's called mindfulness, and that transcends the ego. When you're in that state where you're totally involved with the spiritual process, there is no rush or stress. You as a separate self, as an unhappy story, have been swallowed up by present focus. Present nowness. That's the whole purpose of mindfulness training. So again, notice whenever you are totally interested in something, how it causes the world and time and everything else to vanish. You have no body consciousness when you're totally present with whatever it is you're interested in. And you notice how you have no problem focusing and concentrating on what you're interested in. You know, that's a big clue when it comes to selecting a spiritual practice or an approach to meditation or a form of yoga. There are many, many types of yoga, not just the exercise kind, which is good, but there are other yogas as well. So pick a spiritual approach that you really are interested in and enjoy, because then you'll have no problem with your mind or maintaining your practice. You'll look forward to doing it. But be aware also when you've outgrown that particular approach. Again, it's going to feel flat. It's not going to be interesting. Your mind is going to wander. You're going to want to go do something else. So pay attention and make your spiritual life rich and interesting and varied and suitable to your nature. If you read the Bhagavad Gita, there is a whole list of suggestions for every level of consciousness where you can tuck in and have that divine relationship. And that's a very good book for you to read. A simple one without a lot of commentary. So where is that unhappy self when you are watching a great movie? Or absorbed in reading a good book? Or playing, you know, one of those video games you're really into? Or you're in deep meditation or asleep or with someone you adore? You know, all of these things allow you to transcend yourself, so to speak, in your lower nature. You're caught up in that. So pay attention. These are all clues. Just quietly notice your present focus of attention. How it causes the world around you and self-concern to vanish. Quietly notice how your present focus of attention causes the world around you and self-concern to vanish. That's how you transcend the ego. That's how you stop the world and get off. That's how you exit your unhappy story that you've told yourself and convinced you is real. You stop it by being fully present and focused and participating in your present interest. So where is the unhappy self in its story when you are playing tennis or participating in any activity you thoroughly enjoy? Why don't you do things you thoroughly enjoy? Good question, huh? Why do we not do that? Usually because we're trying to fit into somebody else's world and expectations, and we're not living our own life authentically. Authentically. Give yourself permission to live authentically. Now, some guidelines in helping you make radical changes in your life might be in order. Recognize that in spirit, there is never any urgency. The only one that gets urgent is the lower self, not spirit. So divine spirit is infinite and eternal. And so it's not in a hurry, it's not time-bound, it's not time-limited. It has forever and forever and forever and forever. So bear that in mind when you feel sometimes that great impetus and it's nothing more than your hormones or your undisciplined lower nature. So discern again what the impetus is, and what it's drawing your attention to. Now, your inner child, your basic self, which is about 4 years old, your angelic guardians, or even sometimes your spiritual family on the other side, may indeed issue an urgent directive. For example, don't go down that dark alley. Leave your house. That tree's going to fall on it. Don't stop and park there. Don't trust that person. And those kind of directives that can sometimes come very, very sharply and very strongly will always pertain to saving and protecting your physical life. But spiritually, if you're staying connected by doing your spiritual practice each day, by praying and living according to the spiritual understanding that you have garnered for yourself, you're more or less protected. And you're really protected if you cultivate a positive higher vibration. Because negativity actually attracts negativity. And positivity has a way of covering you and guiding you out of situations that would otherwise have been harmful. So know that if it is a true divine directive, you can take your time and check it out. And it will hold steady, and you'll feel clear about it if it's truly a divine directive. Some of the major, really powerful choices I had to make in my life, I would go off on a retreat for a month or two and really allow the Holy Spirit to clear my consciousness so I was certain that I was making a God-aligned choice. So that's important. And know that if there are any glitches or red flags, check it out before proceeding any further. And keep yourself as clear of binding agreements and long-term commitments to the world and the things of this world as you possibly can. I know that's just, you know, keeping yourself as clear as you can, as long as you can, as much as you can. So act only if you're really clear in your intention that you are not causing harm to yourself or another. And watch your attitude and motive. Stay in your loving. And have goodwill to all. And gratitude. Because those attitudes will definitely keep you aligned spiritually. And have their own protection. So I hope this has been helpful to you. We are really, really going through some of the most powerful collective soul lessons that we could possibly be going through in each one of our nations. I don't think there's anyone on the planet that isn't going through severe shaking and testing, let's put it that way. And everything that is false, that is not clear spiritually, that is not in line with the higher energies of loving and goodwill into which we are moving, is coming apart and falling apart right before our eyes, and is being brought to light and is being exposed. And this is part of the great uncovering that has been called in Greek the apocalypse. Simply means the great uncovering, the great unveiling. And that's what we're in. And it is all good. And out of this will grow the golden age that we have all incarnated to be part of birthing on this planet. So let's go out chanting three Anai hues. Deep breath. Anai hue. Blessings and grace to each one of you, and to all the beings of all the worlds and all of the creations unlimited. We send our love and our blessings. Namaste.